This is Music in Motion,
a podcast looking at how music moves us through our lives,
forward, backward, and everywhere in between.
Produced by the crew at Kilo FM and KRXP FM in Colorado Springs.
Subscribe to this series to follow along as we journey through the music of our lives.
Hey, and welcome to First Episode 2. My name's Ross from Kilo's Morning Show.
Hello.
Sean Rock,
hello,
Rock
hello.
Luncher. So good. Popular, we had to have part two.
Heck yeah, man. All those stories were so interesting, you know, and your favorite rock stars, you like to know that stuff about them.
Yeah, right. And if you didn't listen to the first episode, check it out before you probably dig into this one, as we asked, RXP and Kilo players, what was their first album? And we asked a bunch of rock stars, what was your first album? And it takes them with the power of music through time. You can hear these guys transfer to, you know, when they're 14-year-old kids. It's really amazing, huh?
Yeah, the smile. You can hear
feel
the
it,
smile.
Right? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's cool.
Get ready for some great stories. And to kind of answer a question that was asked, people are like, well, first album, what do you mean? It's a mixed bag. It's the first album you got, sure. If that's the one that inspired you or changed your life, or the first album that you maybe paid for with your own money, or the first album like you stole for the first time because they didn't have the money. But the album that kind of defines you, your first definitive record. And that's where we're going today. We're going to hear from what? Dinosaur Pileup. We got our best of the podcast from overseas. We also hear from drummer of Hailstorm. We got Theory of a Dead Man representing. And of course, some of the Kilo RXP players with some great stories. Ready
amazing
to go?
Amazing. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We're going to start overseas to the UK we go. Guitarist and vocalist for the band Dinosaur Pileup. Matt, your first album.
The first album that I bought and made me want to pursue music would be Foo Fighters' Color and the Shape, which is still today my number one favorite record, and it's still fresh to me. I still get inspired by that record every time I listen to it. You know, like Monkey Wrench, just the perfect kind of like punk rock, like pop song, I guess. And you know, every time I hear Wind Up or Enough Space, it's still just like so fresh and raging and aggressive. It's just like, whoa, like how is this still so great? And I remember when I heard that for the first time, that whole record, all those songs and stuff, it just blew my mind. Like the mix of kind of aggression that's just enough and not too much, and it's raw but it's like polished at the same time. I don't know, everything about it just hit me so acutely. And you know, I listened to that record every day, like growing up, going through school. Every time I'd get in my car, that's the record that I'd put on. I think I had to buy it about four times because I just wore it out. Like the CD was just so worn out. The CD case was just in pieces. I think I like literally rebought it like four times or something. Anyway, yeah. So I'd have to say Foo Fighters' Color and the Shape.
Wow. See, the influence of Nirvana continues through generations, huh?
Yeah, that's, I mean, they get compared a lot to Nirvana, Dinosaur Pileup. And I think it's interesting that
definitely influence there, huh?
More of the influences, yeah. Maybe, you know, post-Nirvana, actually. So, makes sense now.
And kind of like last episode, we talked about stealing music, how it's different now. You know, you used to actually have to physically steal something. Now you just borrow someone's Spotify account or whatever. That's stealing. Same thing with wearing out music. There's no such thing as wearing out music because it's digital. It's forever, right? I mean, CDs were horrible, especially for a dumb kid scratching it up, leaving it, you know, lazily throwing it in the back seat or whatever. There's several albums I've had to buy over and over again. That's done. That's not a thing anymore.
But will it come back? You know, be just like vinyls come back. Like, will CDs be some kind of retro vibe?
Right.
You know,
it could. I mean, hell, even cassettes have shown signs of life again, you know?
Exactly.
This one is also another wear out story. Our very own Andy Crowell and his energetic first.
So my first album ever that I received was a cassette tape copy of The Offspring's Smash, which at least until recently was like the highest selling independent record of all time. So you're welcome, Offspring. I contributed to that. I got it as a present, a birthday present from a friend of mine, my 10th birthday. And it seems like one of those aging things where when I was 10, like, oh yeah, this is perfect for me. But now I'm like a 10-year-old listening to that album. Would they even get it? I'll say this. It was a cassette tape, so you could wear it out. And I wore out the section of self-esteem from like 11 to 14. I listen to that song at least once a day. And honestly, like if I start listening to it, it's like I'll get to the end of it like, well, better rewind and listen to it again. And I'll never forget. So the album starts out with that dude that's like, it's time to relax. And I assumed every album had a narrator after that. Like the next CD I owned, which was Green Day's Dookie, I was like, where's the dude? Where's the dude telling me to enjoy the album? How can I enjoy the album if somebody doesn't tell me to? If it's not time to relax, how can I calm down and enjoy this fast-paced punk rock album?
Slow down. Calm down, Kyle.
It's worked up, that guy.
Also, he became a DJ.
Right, go figure, right?
Like, that makes sense.
Offspring.
Now.
I have fond memories of the album as well. It's funny, I'm obviously 10 years older. I was 20, driving home. That's the only album I had. I just bought it that day. And if you're not familiar with the album, I thought it was 20 minutes. I recently looked it up. It's like 40 minutes. But it's not a long album. And I had like a six-hour drive. And that's all I had there and back. So 12 hours, I listened to that album back to back to back to back to back to back to back for 12 hours over 2 days.
Let's talk about self-esteem. How many dudes replayed that song over and over again because
Monster.
It defined their life, basically.
Kral's not the only one to wear that album out.
No.
For sure. Let's move on. From Ashes to New, you might be familiar with them. Great sound. Cool guys. They've been in town a few times. Matt was nice enough to join us and talks about what you had to do back in the day to get to some music.
I can remember pretty specifically the first time that I bought a CD with my own money. There was this like corner like CD record cassette tape store in the town that I grew up in, and I went there with my sister. She was getting Green Day's Dookie. I remember Sugar Ray, they had the song Fly, and I didn't know anything. I was just real young kid and growing up in like a Christian household. And I didn't know anything about them. So I got that album from that store, and I took it home, and I was real young, and I was playing it really, really, really loud. And I can remember the song Cash came on, and that song drops the F-bomb like 100 times. And my parents, you know, they run this like strict Christian household at the time. They're just like, nope, that's it. You can't listen to it anymore. So that's how I remember pretty specifically getting Sugar Ray's. I don't even remember the name of the album. I just know that it had the song Fly on it and the song Cash on it. I think it was actually called RPM. I think it was Sugar Ray RPM. So yeah, that's the first album I ever bought with my own money.
That's funny, taken away by his parents. Now, by the way, underrated album, that lead singer from Sugar Ray, was Mark McGrath,
Mark
I think.
Mark McGrath, yeah.
He realized there's a lot more money to be made being handsome on TV than working hard in a punk band.
Yeah, but before that album, they had another album, and they were a totally different band, by the way. Like, super rock and roll, like...
That might be the one I was thinking of.
I have to look it up, dude, but it's so good. That album is so ripping. I'm not saying that their other stuff isn't good.
Yeah, but they kind of mellowed out a little bit. But I do remember that. I'm thinking of the same album was really great. And then, yeah, obviously the guy too handsome for rock and roll.
It has that like Mean Machine song and all.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
so
it.
Rad.
That's it. My parents, same thing. Very strict when I was growing up. So I couldn't get any cool rock and roll albums. Mostly, I'm sad to say, I had to steal.
So you were still doing bad things.
Still doing bad things. I can remember when I was youngest, I got a boombox and Michael Jackson's Thriller. Obviously, not fond memories of Mr. Michael Jackson, but I can remember that. As a matter of fact, though, most of my generation, most of my friends, Michael Jackson's Thriller, Beastie Boys, License to Ill, Appetite for Destruction, and Nevermind. Those like four albums, pretty much everyone my age had.
Right.
And I would eventually have those, but, Duran Duran, I had my parents buy me that because a girl had a Duran Duran pin.
Isn't that weird? You can pinpoint those certain albums. Like, for my generation, it'd be like Van Halen 1, Motley Crue's Shout at the Devil, just like Rat, Just...
I do remember seeing that, the Shout at the Devil album cover for the first time, like the sixth grade going,
sick.
What is this? My first, though, like legitimately purchased, goes back to like seventh, eighth grade. Finally had a job so I could get my own albums because, again, my parents would never purchase anything. It was during the whole PMRC. Ozzy was the devil. Matter of fact, I used to have to sneak out of my house when my sister's high school boyfriend, now her husband, came over. I'd sneak out to his truck, steal his AC/DC cassettes, and then go inside and then make copies and then put them back in his truck before they'd finish up their makeout sessions or whatever.
What?
I know, man. I had to go to the links to get good music. So first one, though, I bought, laid out my money, picked up the vinyl of Anthrax's I'm the Man, which is an awesome album.
How did you go from, like, AC/DC, to,
it's the Headbangers Ball I could watch and stuff like that in the middle of the night.
Oh, got it,
and
yeah.
And that was a big 100%. One. And it had that, that cool metal riff, and then they were goofy guys, and it had the, Sam Kinison scream, and then it had that guy from the Beastie Boy album, Sinclair, who turns out that's an old DJ from New York City. But at that time, he was the guy from the Beastie Boys. So that was the album, Because I'm the Man. But then on that album, they cover Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And go through the liner notes as you would as a kid. You read everything, you know, and go through it with a fine tooth comb. And I was like, Osborne, Iommi. I was like, oh my God, this is the Devil Man. This is Ozzy. And I was like, what a great song. What a powerful song. Led me to Black Sabbath. Changed my life.
So Anthrax is how you discovered Black Sabbath. Sick, dude.
Isn't that amazing? Like, yes. And like I said, I got goosebumps right now just thinking about it.
That's
changed my life, because then everything. My motto now is, if Sabbath isn't an influence of your band's not very good.
That's a good standard.
But Anthrax, I wish I still had that, but it was, you know, junior high, early high school, so everything got cut up and hung up in my locker, you know, all the little pictures. Yeah. And the Anthrax vinyl is no more.
Remember the Anthrax contest on MTV on Headbang? I think it was through a Headbangers Ball.
And that thing is why, because those Anthrax to me as a kid just seemed like normal, cool guys, you know?
Yeah.
Other rock stars, they were like, oh, you're untouchable. But
sure.
Anthrax is a bunch of cool, goofy guys. So, yeah, so I've had many albums taken from my parents as well. They hear an F-bomb, like, done. Speaking of family, we got a couple stories. Family, obviously, huge influence comes to music, right? That's, I mean, everyone hears.
Yeah, that's
where you start,
totally,
right?
Yeah, totally for me.
Well, this is a family band. His sister is the lead singer, so he has the unfortunate distinction of playing drums behind his sister and watching 20,000 guys stare at his sister.
That's true.
The drummer for Hailstorm, RJ Hailstorm, and his first.
That is such a difficult question to answer. My parents had a lot of records in the house that we listened to, and it's really hard to single one out. I mean, the Beatles were a no-brainer. That was kind of a staple of the household. I think I can single out three from very opposite ends of the musical spectrum. I think I can really credit the vast musical tastes that both my parents had contributing to my vast taste of musical genres. My dad being the more kind of 70s old school psychedelic rock and roll lover turned me on to, you know, like Jerry Lee Lewis, and Cream was one of his favorite bands. So I think that we had one of their albums, I think it was Fresh Cream, we had on vinyl, and we had a record player in the kitchen, and he made me sit down and listen to that because he knew I was getting into drumming at the time and wanted to introduce me to Ginger Baker's style of playing, who is a legendary player. So that was one early on that I was like, oh yeah, this is cool. This is like my dad's music is pretty cool. But on the other end of the spectrum, I also had my mom's music that she grew up on, and she was more into pop music and more mainstream stuff. And one in particular was 1999 by Prince. I burned a hole in that record. I just love that record to death and still do to this day. And that kind of helped me branch off into, you know, getting into Michael Jackson, getting into Stevie Wonder and things of that nature. But it wasn't until I was an angsty teenager when I bought my very first album with money. And it's really, I think the first album I ever bought was The Sickness by Disturbed. And it was around 2000, and that song Down With The Sickness came out on the radio. And when I heard that, and I heard, wah-ah-ah-ah, you gotta listen to the whole album. So that song, you know, it's garnered enough curiosity in me to want to actually listen to the record. And that's still a heavy album that I still have a soft spot for to this day. Like, I still think it's a solid record front to back. I love it. You know, I love that it was not just heavy, but it also had these industrial sounds and electronic sounds. It was, you know, I was also kind of at the same time kind of getting into like Nine Inch Nails and stuff like that. So I think those three are pretty good examples, I think, of not just any album in particular that got me into music, but I think the albums that helped me develop such a broad sense of appreciation for vastly different sounding genres and styles of music. And I credit my parents for a lot of that.
That's cool. I mean, diversity is a common theme with a lot of musicians.
Yeah, if you're exposed to, you know, different kinds of music, your mind is going to open up to different ways of playing and learning, you know, that method as well, which is cool. It's
exactly
cool to hear those stories.
Right. And it's funny too, it's like some bands just kind of move the needle. Disturbed first album did exactly that. I mean, there's nothing, there was no sounds like that. David Draymond's gutturals and everything, it's like there was nothing like that.
That came out when I first started working here, and that was just mind-blowing. I just mind-blowing.
Changed the world. It's funny, too. Elvis, the Beatles, very common bands to be introduced to for the first time from your parents, huh?
Well, yeah. We were a Stones family.
Stones?
Yeah, yeah. My parents, my mom was really into the Rolling Stones. My whole family was. Beatles were there, but it was more of Stones. And then, like, he explained, like, with his father, my dad had, like, this old country, classic country background. Also, that 50s and early 60s music. I was exposed to all that. I'm amazed at how much I know about oldies music. Like, Fats Domino and stuff like that. Right? It's unreal,
your
right?
brain's so spongy the time you just pick it all up.
It's true.
I remember in high school, I found an album that my dad had I'd never seen before. The Doors, one of the Doors albums. I was like, I didn't know you were cool at one time.
My dad's a Vietnam vet, so I think that some of that music like was a turnoff to him a little bit when he got back. So that's why like the classic country and stuff was in our house a lot.
But
my
else.
Mom was full-blown hippie, dude. We had the Stones, like all of that, like Cream. Also Fleetwood Mac was a big one in our house. So yeah.
Another story of family would be frontman for Theory of a Dead Man. I would say one of the most talented songwriters out there. I mean, Theory of a Dead Man, some poignant Easy. Stuff, some goofy stuff, all of it though very well written. This is Tyler, you're first.
If I could think about one record that definitely got me into music, it wasn't an album that I bought. It was a record my dad had. He had a great rock record collection. We had one of these pieces of furniture where you'd lift up the top and everything was built into this piece of wood and the record player and the speakers. And he had some Doors and Pink Floyd and stuff like that. Supertramp and Led Zeppelin 2 was, I put that on and I remember it was in stereo. So, you know, it starts with A Whole Lot of Love and the guitar solo is in stereo and you're like, wow, this is amazing. I just remember from that point thinking that Led Zeppelin was the best band ever. You know, even listening to Jimmy Page solo on Heartbreaker or what John Bonham was doing, I just thought they were amazing. I just wanted to be in a band. So for me, it was definitely Led Zeppelin 2.
Zeppelin, I'm sure, very popular first for many people in this world, huh?
Yeah, but I also think they kind of get forgotten because they're so everywhere, you know, they're huge. But Led Zeppelin 2 is one of the fiercest
right?
rock and roll albums of all time.
It's funny, I was just talking about this on the air this morning. You know, my familiarity with Zeppelin was only Stairway. So I worked with this hippie, and one day he's like, you like Zeppelin? I was like, well, yeah, they're okay. Stairway's all right. He's like, wait, you never heard nothing? He's like, and he played Communication Breakdown.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, this is the same band? And then again, he's like, wow, these guys, unbelievable. I can imagine. Yeah.
Is one your favorite Zeppelin album?
Probably so.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all so fierce, though, you know?
Yeah, me too. That's one of my favorites. Also, one thing about Jimmy Page, one thing that's always been noted about him by other guitarists is that he's sloppy, but I don't get that as a musician, but I think that's what makes like their
signature
music
sound
so great. Yeah.
You can pick him out of the lineup, that's for sure. Man, who didn't have one of those entertainment cabinets, right? Those things are awesome.
The consoles?
Yeah, everything in one.
I'm on the hunt for one right now that's
800
works.
Pounds.
I'm looking for one that works.
Good luck. Good
I
luck.
Want one.
All right, let's move on to Weekend Sensation. Mr. Nick Miller, you'll hear him on the air at Kilo as off to a little bit of a dysfunctional start. Great story from Nick, his first.
Okay, the first album I ever bought, I got to take you back to 2002. Fourth grade Nick Miller. At Christmas, my grandparents got me a CD. They got me and my twin brother two CDs for Christmas because we just pooled our money and gotten a CD player. One of those old Walkmans, right? I unwrapped my CD and I was so happy. My grandparents got me Weird Al Yankovic's Greatest Hits Volume 2. And at the time, I didn't even know who he was. I'd never heard of him before. We listened to the CD on the drive back home from Grandma's place. The thing about Greatest Hits Volume 2 is that it literally came out in like 1985. So a lot of the songs I didn't even recognize were parodies. I knew they were joke songs, but like Lola was Yoda. I'd never heard Lola before. So about a year later, it's fifth grade Nick Miller. I've been doing chores around the house, making an allowance. My brother's been doing the same, and we go to Best Buy. We convince our dad to drive us to Best Buy, where we know that they sell CDs. We already know we're getting Weird Al CDs, and so my brother stops and gets the Food album. It's like 10 tracks, and they're all food songs, like Michael Jackson's Beat It is Eat It, or Michael Jackson's Bad is Fat. I don't know why. There's a disproportionate amount of Michael Jackson songs on that album. I don't know. But I had been working a bit harder. I had like 10 more dollars, so I picked up Weird Al's Poodle Hat. And I didn't realize until we got home that Poodle Hat had been out for like two or three weeks, literally less than a month. So it was like his new album that I didn't even realize had just come out. That was a cool thing to find out. And then we have one CD player when we get home. That's the thing about being a twin. There's two people, but only one of things. And so since he only has 10 songs on his CD, we're like, you can listen to your CD first, and then I'll listen to mine afterwards. That'll just, you know, be fastest for everyone. So while he does that, I realize we have a computer. I can just put the CD into our family's personal computer. So I do that, expecting it to come up on the media player and just play like a normal CD. But Poodle Hat doubled as a DVD.
Whoa!
And a DVD menu came up with, like, Weird Al Yankovic's home movies. And, like, he was hosting his own home movies and from his childhood and things like that. So that was a very cool surprise for someone who'd never bought a CD before and wasn't expecting a bonus at all. I got a pretty cool bonus out of that one. And I still have that album. I'm still a Weird Al fan. That was a great album. I love Poodle Hat.
He loves Poodle Hat. You're not going to hear that again in the future podcast.
Weird Al, by the way, ahead of the game with his hidden funny videos.
No idea who Weird Al was. No idea of those 80s songs. No idea how a DVD-ROM worked.
Right. It explains a lot about Nick now to me.
Clear. Yeah. Fully clear. I had a bunch of goofy stuff. I remember my dad had Bob and Doug McKenzie. And one of the things, and you'd lay on the carpet, and then they'd put a speaker on either side, and they'd be like, hey, I'm on one ear. It's like, I'm in the other. And that was, like, wildly entertaining. Begged. Dad, can you take the speakers down?
I was raised on some sick humor. My parents didn't shield me for some reason. I was raised on Cheech and Chong and nice. Richard Pryor and all of that. It was not hidden from me at all.
I had an album, and once I have found it, I still have in my collection, Pac-Man Fever. And it's got a bunch of songs about, like, Donkey Kong and Pac-Man. I remember running around the house, Pac-Man Fever, I'm running out of my mind.
And I...
tying a towel around my neck like I was a superhero.
I had Sesame Street Fever.
Oh, good times.
Oh, wow.
Good times. All right, well, let's get to it. Every episode of Firsts, we end with the best of the podcast. And this episode, easy pickings as we go overseas. We started overseas. We end overseas.
I love it.
Nationwide.
I love it. And worldwide. Wait to hear this one.
We've gone international. Yeah, great story for Best of the Podcast comes to us from the band Avatar. And if you're not familiar, you really should become familiar with these guys.
Yes.
What would you can't really label them, right?
I can't even describe them, just like this, like, yes, metal, but at the same time, melodic. They're just so visual, too. You have to see them. You have to see them live.
Johannes is our Best of the Podcast, and his first...
The first album I bought with my own cash, with my own allowance, was Euthanasia by Megadeth.
What?
Now, I have already started gathering a couple of CDs through Christmas and birthdays and stuff, and I think the first significant one in terms of showing where I was heading was getting the Best of Black Sabbath that came out in the wake of their reunion. But before that, the thing is that my brother has already gotten into a lot of metal, and I would sneak Blind Guardian albums out of his room. And through my dad, when I was a kid, he had started to update his vinyl collection of Beatles albums to CD. So through there, I was already being fed all these different bands that still means the world to me to this day. And my brother, in that collection, he had all the Metallica albums, but I heard through a friend stories about this guy who was too crazy for Metallica. And that guy and his band was called something as brutal and crazy as Megadeth. It wasn't just enough with a death. It was a Megadeth. So it sounded all very wild and crazy and edgy, which made it kind of weird that that's the album Euthanasia by them could be found in our local library. So my friend actually lent it from there, and we listened to it and we liked it a lot and all of that. And I, at around the same time, would reach an age where I would be going into town and start to browse the music stores and all that. And there was that album with a crazy cover of the lady hanging up children to dry. And yeah, so I bought it. It was the first one that I remember buying with my own allowance. Opening it up, I was kind of surprised because there was a picture of the band, I think, on the actual CD. And on the library version, there was a drawn-on dick. I think I don't remember if it was which member. I have a feeling it was either Dave Mustaine himself or Marty Freeman's legs. Between one of their legs, there was a dick drawn. And I thought it was part of this edgy One Death Is Not Just Enough as to be Megadeth crazy band's aesthetic. But no, it was just some douchey kid who had drawn it on the library version. Now,
through the years, of course, I kept buying Megadeth albums. And yeah, Peace Sells, Encounter to Extinction, and Rust in Peace are, I guess, up there on the overloaded Mount Rushmore of metal classics for a good reason. But I definitely still have a soft spot for Euthanasia. And also one that I find extremely underrated, not talked about enough today, and not many people's favorites, but that was quite important in my journey into darker, more extreme music, was So Far, So Good, So What. But, you know, none of those discoveries wouldn't have come without that first one. And your first is always your first.
True that. Johannes, there's your Swedish rock.
I would like to hear from more Swedish bands, because they don't have hang-ups and they don't have, you know, tough religious parents hanging things over them.
Right?
They're just like, they can do anything, you know?
I, too, was in Team Megadeth. In hindsight, maybe I picked the wrong camp, but yeah, I was all, no, Dave Mustaine's the man. So I got that going with you, my friend. It's so funny. You thought the band was so crazy, Megadeth, that they drew penises on themselves.
It was just a kid's rule.
Some douche. What do you say? Some douchey kid. So it shows you Swedish kids, just like American kids, drawing penises on everything.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yes.
That's great. Best of the podcast, easily. Johannes, thanks for your first. If you missed the first episode, be sure to revisit that and stay tuned for more.
Yeah, if you want to link up with us on our social media platforms, you can do that. Everything is linked below, including to our playlists that we keep for this podcast.
Cool. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for listening to Music in Motion.
In this series, we'll cover how music moves us, influences us, changes us.
Past, present, and future.
We hope you take this ride with us.